Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health.
Sometimes the conversation around school assumes one thing, that school will work for every child. A school within the mainstream system will work, you've just got to find the right one. But for many families, there comes a moment when that stops being true. A child is anxious every morning, a child who stops going altogether, a child whose nervous system simply cannot cope within the structure of mainstream schooling, and it becomes a heartbreaking decision. And when that moment happens, parents are often left asking what feels like a terrifying question: where do we go now? Today, we are talking about the pathways that exist when schools stop working. I'm here today with Emily Jeffrey, who has spent her teaching career in alternative education settings, working with young people who just don't fit into the mainstream system. Emily, welcome, and I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks so much for having me, Jane. I'm very excited to talk to you.
Excellent. So in typical ADHD fashion, has gone and attempted to do podcast episodes within her maternity leave.
It's an absolute honour. I have a baby sleeping, and that's how we do it. We just go at everything and have a crack.
Let's do what we do. So we will jump straight in. Would you be able to take us to a moment when a young person just wasn't coping in mainstream schooling? What happened for them, and how did alternative education or another path really make a difference for them?
I have so many examples, but it takes me to a teenage boy that I taught in my graduate years. I went to alternative education straight out of my university degree, which is rare for alternative education to pick a graduate teacher. This beautiful boy, he came into the classroom at the start of the year, just as you said in the intro, the badly behaved boy, the defiant, disobedient, the one that you'd get told about if you were walking into a mainstream school that is potentially violent, active, gets in trouble all the time. And he came into the classroom at the start of the year of alternative ed, came in bull at a gate, swearing, working out what he could push the boundaries with, trying to be typically what you would classify as naughty in a mainstream school. Essentially working out, it was very heightened, working out, am I safe here? Who are these people? How do I fit among my peers? And over the year, we gradually got to know each other. And for some context around alternative settings, they're obviously a lot smaller class sizes. We have wellbeing support tools such as wobble chairs and sensory items. It's just all part of the classroom. It's available for everybody. So just very different setting, physical setting. The biggest thing is we work on relationships. So I got to spend heaps of time with this boy. I played basketball, lots of banter. I figured out he was a humor, loved to muck around. So lots of banter. And over the years, we got to know each other quite a lot. And I remember he heard this story. He wasn't even in my class. He heard this story that I'd spelt the word yacht wrong on the whiteboard. So I'd confidently spelt the word, not that great of a speller. I've spelt yacht as yach on the board. Wasn't even in my class, but this other boy in the room told him about this story. So he's got hold of it and thought, I'll take the piss out of her. She can't even spell and she's our teacher. So he would just remind me every day. And I was the English teacher. Can't even spell. She's our bloody teacher. The next year he moved up into what was VCAL at the time. So that's a senior certificate in Victoria. Since been phased out, but a vocational pathway certificate. And they had to write a formal email. So we're practicing writing a formal email. And he sent it to me. And this is a beautiful example of the relationship. We spent so long building this, but he essentially wrote me a formal email saying, good morning, Emily. I hope this email finds you well. Just like to point out that your teaching was pathetic. You couldn't even spell yacht. You spelled yacht. We would have been better prepared for our formal senior schooling if it had been. It had been for you being a better teacher. Yours sincerely. And he's written at the bottom, the biggest shitter, because he used to tease me and say that I was a shit teacher, but he's written the biggest shitter. Kind regards, student's name. So I love that story because it just points out how much relationship and safety goes into finding a schooling option that is safe for students that often don't fit the box.
Love that. I want to go to a school like that because I love a good laugh. I know that I'm going to ask you two questions in one. One, why did you go straight into alternative education as a graduate? And two, what are the alternative pathways like nationally?
So the first question, why did I go straight into alternative education? So I did a 3-year degree in outdoor education. And then I went and worked in school camps. And this particular camp that I worked in was for low socioeconomic schools, so schools that could not afford camp experiences. And I just fell in love with supporting vulnerable young people. And they came from so many different walks of life. So a passion came from there. I then went and did my Masters of Secondary Education at the time in Victoria. And then beyond that, I was looking for a graduate position. And I came across this school that was in regional Victoria. So I had to move. But when I went for my interview, I just had this absolute passion for supporting vulnerable, disengaged youth. In terms of your second question, alternative education, they are often secondary settings. I think there is such a need for a primary alternative schooling options, but I think most of them are secondary at this stage. Alternative education is a different way to meet the educational needs for young people that have struggled or disengaged with the mainstream system. We're often trying to provide some sort of support so that they can thrive in that setting and then move on to a different pathway, whether that be back to a mainstream school, employment services, TAFE, or even different alternative settings. Often the Catholic and independent sector have these, where they're actual schools themselves. I've worked in two of those. And in the government sector, you tend to see less of these individual alternative schools and more schools that are secondary campuses of a bigger mainstream school. So they'll have another campus that's usually in the same town, but it's for young people that have disengaged with the mainstream system for whatever reason. And the other option that you'll see is alternative programs that are usually run in the mainstream school. You might hear this as the shed out the back that the alternative kids hang out in, or like a program that is considered different in some way. That's the common options of alternative education.
Is it the same curriculum? And secondly, how would you find them as a parent if you're listening?
Curriculum-wise, often a modified curriculum. Usually the alternative education is a lot more holistic. We have more resources. We have more support. We're usually getting students that have significant gaps in their education. And I'm talking some students have not even completed part of their primary schooling. Others might have done some mainstream schooling and then become disengaged for whatever reason. But it is usually an altered curriculum. Support is transitioning to another pathway. So supporting that young person for a period of time. And for some students, that's 6 months and great, they're on their next step. Or for other students, that might be their 2 or 3 years. We usually find that after 3 years, students are outgrowing a program because the schools are so small. For example, my current alternative education has four classrooms. We're all generalist teachers. Most of us are secondary. Some of us come from a primary background, but we're not necessarily trained in chemistry and physics and art. So sometimes students reach their capacity. They want to move on and do something more that interests them. Your second question is sad. As a teacher who has only ever worked one term in mainstream education, I did not fit the mainstream system as a teacher at all. I wish there were so many more alternative options and schools. There is such a need for these school options. I would say that families would probably do the exact same as what I did as a teacher and call an alternative education school and ask them what other options exist around me. What are the programs that exist? What are the other campuses? There might be programs within a mainstream school that you didn't know about. So calling an alternative education school or asking a mainstream school can be a good option if you are looking into that. I wish there was more settings. So I am with all of the families out there that are saying, this sounds great, Em, but where are they? Because I wish there was more. I think I've nearly run out of places to work in my area. I'll probably have to move if I want to go to another alternative education setting.
Okay, I agree. And wouldn't it be great to have a national database of all of the things available, because it's so confusing for parents. So what you're saying is you have a disengaged student, somebody who hasn't coped in mainstream for whatever reason. They come out to alternative education and then get to a point where they're like, I actually have found a passion and I can't do this in this setting. which also opens the door for another child to come in that really needs it because there wouldn't be a lot of places available. Have you seen many kids successfully move from alternative education back into mainstream and do well?
Yeah, we have. We really have. And I think this speaks to the resources and the nature of an alternative education setting. So they're quite small. We spend a lot of time focusing on safety and relationship. And there is a bit of pressure here in terms of, similarly with the mainstream sector, the academic pressure of the short-term success. We still get that same pressure, and that's why data looks a little bit different for us. But ultimately, we're thinking long-term as soon as we get a student enrolled. We're always checking in with their goals and their pathways and how to adjust these. And that comes into adjustments and individual learning plans and things like that, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit at some point. But when you are really given that opportunity to build a relationship with a young person, to get to know them, to learn from them, like, I'm the teacher, but honestly, the best teachers in the room are the students and their families. When you really stay curious and learn how these young people learn, what they want to achieve, how they best thrive. And we are given this opportunity, small setting, less academic pressure, more of a holistic approach, whole person learning, I suppose you might put it. We see success in a whole different way. So we see success in a student learning to feel safe in the classroom. We see a success in a student moving from 1 hour a day to half a day, maybe even doing a full day. And yeah, that might be across 6 months, but that's huge. Or we see young people being able to confidently try something and say, hey, I actually tried building and construction at TAFE and I don't want to be a builder anymore. And be able to say that, that's enormous. So we do have young people often that transition to different pathways, some of which is back to mainstream school. So I'll give you an example from our current school. So we usually get from year 9 to year 12 in terms of who year levels that are enrolled at our school. Some schools I've worked with is year 7 to year 12. So usually we run programs that are focused on building community skills or social and emotional skills, or being out in the community, or engaging with other people and other programs. And that doesn't look very traditional doesn't look very academic in a mainstream sense, I suppose you might say. So sometimes that program repeats itself a little bit just through the nature of getting new students each year. And young people then, because we're fostering goals that are not just academic, they are social goals, they're self-awareness goals, they're regulation goals, they're pathway-based goals. We are constantly seeing, and sometimes this is challenging for the young people because it is our job to try and slowly build their confidence that they can move on to the next step. And that takes time. That takes a lot of time. So we have students that do successfully transfer back to mainstream school. Sometimes they miss the social aspect because we have 50 kids enrolled. So they're not getting that broad range of social interactions. And for some students, they eventually yearn for that. And other students couldn't think of anything worse. They can't wait to thrive in a smaller setting. And we support those students that want to transition back to school, mainstream schooling, absolutely. And that is a slow process at times. It's wellbeing support workers walking to the school with them if possible. It's helping them with paperwork. It's talking to them about open days and subject selections and meeting staff members from a mainstream school. And mainstream schooling don't have the resources to do this, but we do and we're really lucky. Same goes for a TAFE pathway. So they might engage in TAFE one day a week. And if we can, we would build that support network until they don't need that anymore and they're independently engaging in TAFE, very similar for an employment service or just helping with resumes and different pathways. Usually they're the older kids more.
I'm going to ask you a tricky one. We have one alternative education place. I think it's grade 10, 11 and 12 up here. And I get a lot of emails about it. For example, I had one yesterday and it had from a mum and she said, hi, just wondering if you know anything about insert name college on the Sunshine Coast. My daughter has been bashed within the mainstream system. She's traumatized. She struggles academically and she won't go back to mainstream schooling. This is actually the second school it's happened to. Insert horrific story. It's just awful. But she said, I've heard from this particular college that there's massive behaviours here. There are chairs being thrown through the windows. Like, my daughter is traumatised. She doesn't want to be around an environment that's dangerous. But we've got no options except for homeschooling or distance ed, and she actually really needs help. How do you think my daughter would fit in to this particular college? And I see this question all the time. There's an idea that a child possibly has been in trouble before, et cetera, goes to these alternative educations. And then it feels like there's a section that are caught in the middle because they're so worried about putting their child back in an environment that might also be traumatizing. Do you have any thoughts around that?
Yeah, I do. And I have so much empathy for families because as a teacher, I think a lot of us hear about alternative education and think, well, these are the kids that's where, and they're violent and there's police called and there's police at this school all the time. And I thought that in my graduate year. I thought, oh my gosh, what am I doing? This is going to be terrifying. Why? But I think there is a huge misconception about alternative education schools and settings and campuses. And I think that, yes, this can unfortunately happen across any school setting. And we don't want that to happen. But we have a duty of care that we're not having students being hurt every day or having these horrific stories, like you said, occurring all the time. We have a duty of care of that. What most, I would say less so in the government sector. I think that they probably unfortunately get less funding, but or different funding, or they have to prioritize it in a different way. But in the two schools that are the standalone schools that I've worked at, there is so much that goes into enrollment. So firstly, that yes, there is often a lot of, there's a huge wait list usually for these schools. And I think talking from a parent's perspective, calling them, and if you can go for a tour and see what the alternative settings say, because the enrollment process is so thorough and it has to be for safety of the young people that are in our settings and under our care, there is careful consideration given to not certain students, but given to how can we provide a safe learning environment? Because if we don't have safety, we're not getting any learning. So there's an extensive process of the enrollment. It involves a lot of tours. It involves a lot of meetings. You're walking into our classrooms and seeing what's going on, one-to-one meetings with the family. This is the leadership teams. I can't speak to the process really thoroughly because I'm in the teaching side of things. But from what I know, there are multiple meetings. And what families sometimes find when they do the tours and they go through the meetings is, oh, hey, maybe this setting isn't really what I thought. And maybe the homeschooling, virtual learning might work better. Or they might say, hey, we've actually got this alternative program that we know of in our region or this campus or this other school. This might be worth checking out for the needs of your young person. And sometimes that is through the realization of the family once they've engaged with the alternative school and been through some meetings and some tours. And sometimes that is from the perspective of the leadership team and saying, hey, we are actually not the best setting for your young person. We appreciate that you've come and talked to us. We think these other pathways or these other settings or schools might suit your needs a lot better. And I have full respect for the leadership team that do that. In alternative education spaces, they really do give the time of day to young people and their care team and their families, which again, mainstream schooling just does not have the resources for, unfortunately.
And so when you're talking to kids that have come into alternative education, what do you think drives them out of mainstream schooling? And what do you think alternative education has that mainstream doesn't have?
Yeah, I think we can probably, your listeners probably understand the mainstream system is so rigid. It's so one size fits all. It's so academic focused. It's very short term. It's data driven. It's funding. There's so many things that we have the opportunity to do in an alternative setting that mainstream teachers and leadership teams don't. But from a perspective of what they're not getting at mainstream school, it's that time to build a relationship, that time, that understanding. And not just jumping to conclusions about a young person because they can't follow instructions or they need movement or they're just basic needs that need to be met. Teachers don't have time to be able to do that. And it's heartbreaking. Some of these things I've since learnt through 7, 8 years in alternative education that are really simple, definitely do in a mainstream school. but other things, and mostly it is a system. It is a system, as we're often talking about. But when we have a young person that starts in alternative education, and it's not always at the start of the year. A lot of people do think that. We do sometimes have some alternative programs have rolling enrollments throughout the year. Some have half yearly or semesterly intakes, and some have yearly intakes. At the current school I'm in, it is a yearly intake, probably hence why there's quite a long wait list for those schools. But when they're starting, understandably, the young person is, and the family, are exhausted. They're frustrated. They're hurt. They have no idea. They're just thinking, is this another rinse and repeat? Another school, same thing. Are we just going to be bouncing between schools? And one of my favorite parts of being a teacher in the alternative setting is being able to slowly break that and build trust with the young person and the young person's family or care team. And that takes time, and we have that time. So term one often looks like a bit of a, I mean, if you walked into my classroom in term one, you would think, oh, Emily should not probably be a teacher, to be honest. Like, where's actually the learning? But the learning is all about safety and relationship at that point. You cannot achieve engagement, learning outcomes unless you have built those foundations. And so much of that start point is about getting to know the young person, learning about what their challenges were in their previous schools, if they want to talk about it. If they don't, that's fine. It's very individual. So some students come in, like I said at the beginning, with the young boy with the gloves on, fighting, ready to have a fight, ready to know that, oh, every other teacher has not given me the time of day and let me down or told me off because I had a Nike tick on my socks instead of saying, g'day, I'm glad to see you whenever you walk through the door. Like, you've made it. You have no idea what's going on for a young person. And often these students have had so many negative experiences of school. And that's the young person, let alone their families and what they're holding it together all day. And then they come home to their safe people. And we know that all the emotions come out there. And so understandably, people at home, families, carers, care team, support networks, they're the same, exhausted, frustrated. And it takes a while to build that trust with them as well. And that's where I really value alternative education, giving us the time to have meetings. And we're really lucky. We get a day where we, or an afternoon when we prioritize ILP meetings. We often don't get to our admin that similarly in the mainstream sector is often what you hear teachers finding really challenging, that there is a lot of admin. Yes, there is a lot of lesson planning and things that you have to document that you just think, if I could focus on what is really important, then you would have more time to do the things that we're really lucky to do. Call families and text home. And it's wild because in term one and two, often I love calling families and sending them a text. And straight away, they almost start with, what have they done again? And it's just such a privilege to be able to say, I'm actually calling you because your child stood up in front of the class and presented at oral presentation, or I'm actually calling you because they want to stay for the rest of the day, even though their timetable is to finish at midday, but they'd like to stay for the rest of the day. We have that ability to spend time, to build relationships, to be flexible in timetables, to actually meet the adjustments that are part of a legal requirement, really, of an ILP and policies and act that have to be enforced by schools.
That is just so interesting to hear about, because all of the guests have talked about the rigidity of the system and that children are no different now than what they were 20 or 30 years ago. But the structure, the rigidity, the pace, the way it's delivered has created, and this is me taking all of the guests' words and putting it into Jane's words, but they've all said a similar flavour around, if we could connect with the kids, have smaller numbers, have more professional development, be more flexible. Why are we delivering it in this tiny way? And then if a child doesn't fit, they're cast out. And it's been interesting because you've literally talked about alternative educations in exactly the same way. Did you have anything else to share finally before we finish up, Emily?
I just wish that there were more options, and really do reach out to explore alternative education options in your area, because they do not always have the stigma or the stereotype that you might hear. Investigate and see if it is a possible option.
Legend. Okay. Thank you so much for your time, Emily. We are going to finish up. If you'd like to leave a review or share this episode with a friend, thank you so much.
Quick announcement.
Did you know that we have an ADHD Mums shop filled with resources designed just for you? These resources are packed with answers to the most frequently asked questions I get sent in via email. Everything from understanding ADHD and autism to practical tips for daily life. There's also a free assessment tool. If you're wondering about ADHD or autism for yourself or your little one, don't forget to check out the free assessment tool under free resources section on my website, adhdmums.com.au. Quick announcement. Did you know that we have an ADHD Mums shop filled with resources designed just for you? These resources are packed with answers to the most frequently asked questions I get sent in via email. Everything from understanding ADHD and autism to practical tips for daily life. There's also a free assessment tool. If you're wondering about ADHD or autism for yourself or your little one, don't forget to check out the free assessment tool under free resources section on my website, adhdmums.com.au.